This is Sunday Skate on Sports Radio WEEI.
The first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and the NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey.
Like it is sure.
Yeah.
With Ken Laird from the Mutt and Callahan Show.
What a bunch of criminals. We ought to be in jail. That's all there is to it.
WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman.
He's the killer.
Sunday Skate is brought to you by Wise Snacks and by Star Market, the official supermarket of the Boston Bruins.
Beast is winning, you know, we got a lot of losses.
Lace them up for some Beast Talk right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
June the 25th, 2019, Ken Laird here, and I'm sitting with the man who told me everything was going to be all right many, many weeks ago. He was a Mutt and Callahan staple during the Cup run. Almost was all right, and then it wasn't. In Game 7, Matt Kalman is here. It's the debut. I think this is our official debut of the new podcast, right?
The relaunch. Sure.
Relaunch of Zero Pucks Given has been trashed. Dale is no longer contributing, so he's out. So we are rebranding it.
It's about
not,
time.
It's not an imaginative name, I will say that.
He's been the David Backus of this station, I'll tell you.
Was it a buyout for basically no cap relief? We're still saddled with Dale's contract for the next couple years. But our Sunday show, which did have a nice extended run, you and me and Pete Blackburn, who was a great addition this year.
I heard Marchand has a broken hand.
Is Sunday Skate. That was a name given to us by DJ Bean and our forefathers. So
yeah, we in this. Sunday Skate.
We have continued that, the EEI tradition. So this is now all the creativity we can muster, the Skate Podcast. At the Skate Pod on Twitter. Callan just officially branded that minutes ago.
Yeah, you have to have a... Mm-hmm. Always have to have
right.
It goes back. I'm still trying to picture DJ Bean as a founding father.
He's
two-hair powdered wig and stuff.
Yes, he was.
Fred in New Hampshire is always involved. So, Fred, let me ask you one question. What'd it do?
We have a busy, busy couple weeks here, and then probably there'll be nothing happening.
Right.
But we do have a draft to react to. But before that, we're approaching July 1st. Let's get right into it. I fully expected Torey Krug to be dealt Friday night, and nothing happened. Not much happened across the league other than the Piqué Subban deal. And the Leafs jockeying for Mitch Marner's contract by sending Patrick Marleau out of town. And the draft was okay. We can get into that. But you and I talked about Krug on Sunday Skate even before the playoffs began. This was their big decision they had to make coming into the offseason. He's got 1 year left at $5.25 million. He obviously wants paid, and his playoff run was, I don't want to throw the word around loosely, it was incredible. I absolutely thought he would be exposed. Totally thought he would be exposed at some point in the playoffs. Never was. He was Krug Smythe, as you dubbed him, until Tuukka soared into he was going to win, and there was a chance Tuukka was going to win even if they lost that series. But where are they now with Torey Krug? And were you surprised he was not dealt on Friday night?
No, I mean, the Friday night thing, obviously no one was going to make any trades because no one knew what the salary cap ceiling was, and I guess,
Which, how does that happen?
Well, because they waited to the last minute, the players, to argue over escrow and argue over the raising the cap, and they didn't inflate the escalator as much as they should have. And so they cut themselves off to the point where now you have all these free agents, and I don't really know. And we can, this maybe goes off the topic of Krug, but you wonder if all these UFAs are really going to get the money they think they're going to get now with the cap being so low. But, to go back to Torey Krug, I'm not surprised they didn't trade him because, A, the activity was so slow, and B, because I don't think they really want to do that. And I think...
So what do they want to do? Do they want to extend him at $8-9 million a year?
I don't think it's going to be that much. I just don't see him asking for that much at this point. I think... He is at the stage in his career where he loves it. We know, everyone says they love it here, but my personal opinion is he is one of the maybe handful of people that really does love it here. Marcus Johansson can say that, but he's been a kind of a gun for hire here, and I'm sure he'll go where the money is.
Krug's attached because they took a chance on him, or they wanted him from the get-go.
They knocked him out. He has a lot of tight ties to the organization, people in the front office, scouts that are friends with his family. Obviously, his wife just had a baby, so they're establishing their family here. He's seen, the Charas and the Bergerons, how they've put down roots here, and we know what the culture is. Just as far as you don't ask for $8 to $9 million here, can't compare it to Pastrnak because he was RFA, but Brad Marchand clearly could have been $9 or $10 million player had he gone to market, waited a little longer, even with his Bruins deal, and decided to do something reasonable.
Was there a Bergeron cap with him? I mean, because some people said...
Well, the Bergeron cap would be the Krejci cap, because Krejci's been making more than him all this time.
That's true.
But yeah, I know what you're saying, because obviously the Krejci deal was signed in a different market.
Bergeron's getting 6.875 annual, and Pastrnak comes in at 6.6.
Right, so, you know, will Krug adhere to that? I mean, I could see Krug getting 7, but I don't really see him getting more than that, and maybe even a little less than that just to get the term and basically be a Bruin for the rest of his career, because... You know, at his size and everything, you don't know how much more he's going to go beyond, say, 5-6 years. And maybe you do a 6x7 or a 6x6.5, and you get it done. Now, whether or not that play jives with what's going to happen with, you know, McAvoy and Carlo.
Right. That's the concern.
It's tough. But
now maybe down the road they feel like one of those guys will get poached by the expansion team, so therefore they're not going to carry.
Well, those will be your three guys protected, I think. I think you're going to protect 3D. It's going to be Krug, McAvoy, and Carlo. And, you know, obviously that makes Grizzlick somewhat expendable, but he might be expendable now. He might be the one that you cut for to just trim a couple of million if that's the way you want to go. I mean, at this point, Vaakanainen is not ready to replace Torey Krug, but he might be ready to replace Grizzlick,
right?
On a second power play and be a bottom pair guy while he breaks in. And if you factor him in and Lauzon and Zboril, you might have enough to make up. You know, I'm not saying that Grizzlick down the road might not end up being a Torey Krug type player, but right now, he's not. And then they bring in this kid, you know, Cooper Zek, a rookie free agent like Krug was. I mean, everyone's making the comparison because he was a college free agent, because he's a smaller guy that seems to have a lot of skill they kind of like too. So they've built that depth there where you can maybe start trading off a guy like a Grizzlick instead of a Krug. But
and Clifton was a fine, and they just brought Clifton, Camphor back at a two-year deal. So they have some depth, that's for sure. And
even
John Moore played more meaningful games and minutes than I ever thought he would.
Right, and you've got Moore locked up, although he's going to be out for the first half of the year, and Miller too. But
Forgot about Miller.
Yeah.
So, they are deep there. I mean, I guess that's all why I thought, and back to McAvoy getting blocked. At some point, do they view him as the top power play quarterback? And if you sign Krug, is he then – somehow inhibited from becoming blossoming into the Bobby Orr figure of this millennium that they want him to be or envision him to be? I don't know. I mean, Krug is much better on the power play right now. It's not even close.
Right, exactly. So not that it's so difficult to do this, but when you put a McAvoy right-handed shot at that spot, you have to kind of rework everything. You have to redesign your plays. Clearly, as long as you're using this setup with Bergeron in the bumper and Pastrnak in the wing there, this is the best way to go. And so if you're looking at it that way, I mean, first of all, again, we don't know what the CBA is going to look like next year and beyond, right? But if you're going to look at it the way it is now, you're looking at maybe 2 or 3 more years of this formation. So you just say, okay, we're going to commit to this. And then maybe 2-3 years down the road, that's when you start to pass the baton off to McAvoy. And, maybe at that point, Krug needs to play fewer minutes or isn't quite as dynamic. I mean,
or he needs a contract that does not have a no-trade clause where you can get out from under.
Well, you would assume that the no-trade is going to be 2 or 3 years, 4 years of no-trade, and then from there it would probably be, reduced different scenarios like Backus has now, or any of these guys, Krejci has, about submitting your list and all that, and we know how those lists become very flexible, too. I mean, plus, you don't know what the CBA is going to look like. You don't know who the general manager is going to be. You don't know. There's so many things to look at.
Don't know who the general manager is going to be.
Yeah, you never know. 4 years from now, you're going to tell me that Don Sweeney is definitely going to still be the general manager?
That's true.
No idea.
He's a hot commodity now, executive of the year.
Who knows?
The power play, the points, those things speak for themselves and have been for, throughout his time here. He's a big part of our club. Have opportunity, starting July 1st to open up talks. Again, the RFA market and some of our internal things will dictate the timing of those conversations. If somebody blew us away, every player has to be looked at in that way. When you're an organization, you just have to. You're doing a disservice if you don't. But it would take a pretty unique opportunity for us to part with Torey. We think he's a big part of the fabric of our group. He's kind of that next wave of leadership that we talk about in behind some of the guys that have carried that mantle for a long period of time. But he's an important part of our club.
Well, even, hearing Sweeney talk after the season about Carlo, McAvoy, Heinen, the restricted free agents, they're going to tender those guys today. I'm sure they are as we speak. But saying they're going to play for us at some point this year. How about that?
Isn't that hilarious? That's some comment to say they're going to play for us at some point. Well, I guess he figures December 15th, somebody's signing something, even if it's a 1-year deal. they're going to get something done. I mean, no one's sitting out. I mean, you saw what happened with Nylander last year. Not to mention, he took it up to the last second and then had a terrible season. So
right. That's
a cautionary tale for sure, especially for a guy like Heinen.
Will McAvoy and Carlo want to pay the big dollars now, or will they accept a bridge sort of a contract?
Well, that's what it's going to come down to. I mean, it's hard to get a feel for them. Their agents are very quiet right now. Sweeney doesn't say anything. And you look at, this is a very far off comparable, but Travis Sanheim yesterday in Philly, he's only had one full year, really. He just finished his entry level, but he really only had one full NHL year. It was a really good year. He's kind of maybe a little bit of both of those guys. He's got the offensive side and a defense. He's more of a two-way guy, and he got $3.5 million on a two-year bridge deal, $3.5 million per. I mean, that's your starting point, and that's way off from where you think Carlo, especially, and then McAvoy's in a different stratosphere, obviously. But I think people are underselling Carlo, too. People saying he might take the bridge deal and go for $4 or $5 million. That's not happening. Why would you do that after the postseason he had? I mean, you're looking at...
And he's already had major injuries, and he knows what the risks are. As
absolutely.
Does, so and he's, those guys won't...
And he's a cornerstone.
The bottom line is they've got to shed some salary somewhere. Right. They cannot sign these guys to these kind of deals. This is what Sweeney, I'm sure, is dealing with. And the Backus contract is so bad... they have to get rid of him. They have to find a way to move him somewhere.
It's virtually impossible. If you look at it, it cost them a first-round pick cost $6 million if you look at the Marlowe deal. And that only costs the Hurricanes, if they buy him out, $4 million, right? Because they're paying two-thirds of it over.
Right.
Over
now, Subban, they took the whole thing. $9 million.
Subban, they took the whole thing because they're the New Jersey Devils and they had $35 million in cap space and they're desperate.
That's true.
And, they have a new ownership group that I guess is really hitting its stride now. I'm not exactly sure the details of what the struggle was there, but it seems like these two guys that are now calling the shots there are trying to become a legitimate, New York, New Jersey franchise and have marquee players. And so you add Subban, you add Jack Hughes, and now they're going to go full court press to keep Taylor Hall, who's going into his last year. So that's a different situation there. They still have $20-something million in cap space, and they only have two, RFAs that anyone even cares about. So they've got a lot of room to go. I mean, there's just not that many teams doing that. Obviously two different scenarios. P.K. Subban's 30 and can still play.
Right.
Patrick Marleau, maybe the Hurricanes are looking at him as a Justin Williams replacement, which could be, for 1 year for $6 million,
he's not going to play there. It doesn't seem like he's going to.
They said they're going to convince him.
Really?
It's not a foregone conclusion that he's being bought out. I don't think they're going to, considering how he's been so open about, I'm playing in California next year, I don't think, unless he's confused between Carolina and California, but I think he's gone. Nonetheless, like I said, it's only a $4 million hit for them, and they got the first-round pick. So
Jack Hughes.
And that's to get out of the one-year deal. This Backus has two more years. More onerous as far as his signing bonuses and things. So,
I assume, shipping it. Well, it was 2 seconds for Subban, right?
Two seconds and two players.
And a couple
Santini's
players.
Santini's a pretty good player.
Okay, so.
And that prospect has come on.
Is there a way you can get rid of Backus, a couple second-round picks, a prospect, and get that cap space? Is somebody
taking
that?
Maybe if you're getting, that's getting pretty, what's the prospect? I mean, this kid that they gave up,
JFK.
The Devils gave up in that deal. Is this kid that Northeastern, he's a superstar. So, a late bloomer, I guess. So, what are they,
But they have no choice, right? I mean, they have to. They
really do. But the only problem is I don't see the suitor for that. That's the thing. You look at the teams that are at the
give me those
at
teams
the bottom.
Yep, fine.
I mean, you got
Ottawa Senators.
These are the teams that are under the cap right now, right? Winnipeg only has 14 players signed, so of course they're below it. You know they're going to sign a bunch of guys, like Line A, and maybe they'll bring Myers back, or they'll have to get a Myers replacement. I mean, Carolina, we know what their situation is. They're going to get to the. They're $3 million, $4 million behind. Aho is going to double that right there. They'll be across. The Devils are $5 million down. They'll add one UFA. Maybe you would replenish. Maybe New Jersey would take it, your first round pick, to take back as a bury him. They're so active, but are you really? How sweet are you making these deals to get rid of this guy? Columbus, Ottawa, Colorado. Plus, you got to remember he's got an eight team trade list. I don't think any of these teams are on it.
I can't see Backus wanting to stay here and be embarrassed for the last 2 years of his deal. I mean, if he goes to Ottawa, the perception is he's marooned there for sure, but at least he plays out the string and tries to be the good.
Well, is he guaranteed to play in any of these places? Is Ottawa putting this guy in a lineup? That's the thing. He can't play. I mean, the what might end up happening.
You wanted to hand him the cup second. So, I mean, I don't know. Is the guy a hero? That's right.
I don't want to be one of these jerks. He can play. We saw him be able to play. He has his moments. He's just...
He's a fourth liner. He's
Alex Steen. Liner who can plug up in the second line on brief occasions, certain matchups.
Yep.
He's a guy that you're probably, if you're bringing him back this year, he's only going to play 50 games next year. Partly by choice, just because you don't want him playing back-to-backs. You don't want him playing fours and sixes. He can't do it. And we know what his leadership brings. I mean, the guy has some value. I don't even know. But the thing is, I don't know how many teams are even putting him on a fourth line, especially like a team like Ottawa.
It's almost the contender. You're right. You almost have to find somebody who fancies themselves as needing a veteran piece.
Does that really exist?
The conscience of the locker room.
They're going to have to sweeten the deal. I mean,
because not only do they have their own guys to re-sign, we've got Magic Johansson, who was ripped by all of us as Deadwood Johansson through five games of the Leaf series, and then the switch went flipped, as Bradfield would say, and man, he was dynamite, and you found a guy who connected with Coyle to the point where you have got to keep him, right?
He worked. But
if he's
cooking with Coyle, that makes him a third liner, and you can't pay him what he's going to get.
What's he going to
be a third liner?
What is he asking for?
I think he's $6 million at least. Guy, he is. The skill.
For multiple years,
huge deal. $6 million. Yeah, that's what he is. I mean, he's got all the skills. He has the experience.
But you would agree, if there's one thing on the Bruins list besides keeping their internal guys, they need a Marcus Johansson type, right?
To play with Krejci or to play with Bergeron and Marchand if you're going to move Pasternak. That's what you need.
Johansson's as good as anybody on the market.
Except he won't play the right. He didn't look good on the right side, and I'm not sure he fits the mold for that. Not to mention he's such a playmaker.
Move Brusk over then.
Can you really put a playmaker? Okay, but do you want a playmaker like Johansson playing with Krejci? Or are you putting him with Bergeron and Marchand?
Well, Sweeney and Neely have talked a lot about that Krejci needs a guy
that can shoot, wants to shoot.
Yes.
That wants to shoot. And it's not Charlie Coyle. That's a damn sure. Charlie Coyle's stock and trade is not shooting enough.
Well, maybe Pasternak is the fit there, and then Johansson becomes your Bergeron wing. I don't know.
But it could be, but, you know.
But bottom line, he gives you some options, which
You're not fitting him. I mean, he's not going to fit in the cap.
So he's gone. There's no chance.
I don't think so. I can't see it happening. I mean, I'm still kind of obsessed with Zuccarello,
because he's cheaper?
Who's might be a little cheaper. He's 31 and maybe is looking more to win rather than cash in at this point. And maybe it would have been – I know it's hard to say, but let's imagine they lose Game 7 at Toronto and we're kicking – Johansson to the curb, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is what would have happened, okay?
Definitely.
I mean, the guy won the GM of the Year award based on basically one game, because they lose Game 7 of Toronto. They're not...
Well, by the way, when does that voting take place? Because...
It takes place after the second round.
After the second round.
And it's some vague combination of other GMs and front office people and... I think there's actually some media, literal, whatever you call it, the Illuminati there that picks these things. I don't know. Who votes on the Mark Messier Leadership Award? Is it just Mark Messier? Who knows?
I would say if you compared him to the St. Louis general manager, that was an awesome, in hindsight, how did...
Right. Well, that's just it. Armstrong did it. So much longer term, adding Bozak and Eddie
Summers.
Perron. I mean, so you look at that.
Although Kuhlman and Clifton were pretty good under the radar.
Yeah,
signings.
Kuhlman and Clifton, and sure, and Wagner and Nordstrom, right? I mean, sure. Sweeney had a good year, but it was made better by the fact that they got past Toronto clearly, and were on the cusp of not even doing that in Game 6. You remember, but by the same token, he put himself in that same hole by thinking that JFK and Frederick and Solarik and Studnicker were going to be the guys, and you weren't going to have to make these trades. I mean, they did give up an asset. They gave up two assets, but especially one for Johansson or for Coyle, right? You had to give up Donato, who clearly could have been.
Would he have played here this year?
He'd certainly be in the mix right now to be in that top six wings. And we saw the second round pick go to Jersey in that draft, and who knows, what that could have been. It's not that big of a deal, I guess. When you look at the fact that they used to give away second round picks to get at least Stempniak, at least they get good players for second round picks now. And so where were we going on that?
Well, just
Zuccarello was my point. I just think that he might be a better. He's got more fire. He's more of a winning kind of player. As far he might not have the same skill set at this point that Johansson has, but Johansson being at his age, pre 30s, obviously looking for longer term and more money, and Zuccarello just might be a guy that you can get on a 2 or 3 year deal and get maybe for a little shorter. But you don't have any money right now, so clearly,
right,
there's going to be some issues.
And all these guys they were interested in that are free agents, Ferland and Nyquist. I mean, you go through the whole list.
Yeah.
I mean, Dzingel. These were players they were in on, as we talked about at the trade deadline.
Right.
So they had some interest in everybody.
Yeah,
so maybe they'll just take
and those guys
whoever
are,
the cheapest
short-term
deal. You know,
at this point, what is Wayne Simmons going to get? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of teams.
Right, he needs like a one-year prove-it.
As bad as the Bruins cap situation, it's not even the worst out there, right? Vegas is now over the cap by the $8 million that you can be over it. Tampa Bay, you name it, all these good teams, Toronto, are in the same position. So where's the money for these UFAs coming from? Who's signing these guys? And so will guys like Wayne Simmons or even Zuccarello or people like that be forced to sign even shorter-term prove-me deals? And then you go to the Corey Perry thing. And
he was bought out. And you could always just do it again next year, just wait until the trade deadline and go
for your
winger.
Well, that's what they might be forced to do here. I mean, I guess, you know, conceivably you could fit the three RFAs in and just come back with the same team. And
Carson Coleman is your guy for 4 months, and then you figure it out.
Well, maybe you think that, let's see, you got Solaric coming back again. He'd be motivated. Stadnicka will definitely be a pro. We didn't see much of Ryan Fitzgerald. We didn't see any of Ryan Fitzgerald in the NHL last year because he banged up at the wrong times. You know, a lot of times we didn't see some of these guys because they were hurt when the Bruins needed guys to come up. So he's in the mix, and Frederick could be in the mix as well. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure if Stadnicka is a guy they want to move to the wing to start out, just to tutor him. You know,
the other theory that's thrown out there, and our man Jermaine Wiggins wanted to trade Bergeron and Krejci, but
oh, for sure. Oh, yeah, all right.
Which is obviously not going to happen. But Krejci, it does give me pause. Now, I thought he had an unbelievable year. I would have given him the six-man, seventh-man award.
Yeah, right.
Just based on expectations. But he's a proven guy, so, you know, I guess that's kind of silly. But the bottom line is he had a great year. Now, he didn't show up necessarily in the cup finals as people wanted. He is older. He's got trade value.
He's the same
now.
Age as Bergeron.
Both 34?
Yeah.
Okay. But if you're going to trade Krejci, now's the time, right? He just reestablished his trade value. He's got 2 years left, so
you're in that quandary that I don't know what the GMs look at. Do they look at the fact that he had 70 something points last year and had a, you know,
I think it's a Ryan O'Reilly type of trade, right? You see what O'Reilly did to St. Louis.
How old is O'Reilly?
Yeah, much younger.
But, yeah, that's the thing. I don't think you're never.
But for 2 years?
You're at the point now. It happened to Chara like 4 or 5 years ago when people would say, oh, trade Chara. You're at the point now, or even Tuca at this point. You're not going to get value based on the production. People aren't.
But it's clear in $7 million. And
right, but you're not getting.
Coyle's
you're not
bumped
getting,
up second line center. Now you're putting Stanicki as your third line center.
Yeah, you're not going to get the value you want. You're not getting a Ryan O'Reilly. Even a Ryan O'Reilly package was way short of what it should have been.
That's true.
Buffalo got fleeced, but at least they got the first round. I think they got maybe two
But they
firsts.
Sold low on him, right?
He was struggling. Well, he wasn't struggling. He said some dumb things, and they decided it was time to trade him. I mean, yeah, they traded him low because he said some true things about his team, which is what you'd want someone like that to say when you're the Buffalo Sabres and you haven't won anything in 30 years. And then they... Obviously, they decided to get him out of town no matter what. But, you know, one of the guys they traded for retired. So, not exactly the package you want. And at 34, if you're doing it, you're doing a salary dump. You're doing a PK Subban salary dump.
Keep,
and then, you know, you're,
keep
really,
your blue line
you're really knocking some dominoes over there as far
it
as.
It is. It's a major.
Charlie Coyle. We don't even know if Charlie Coyle is a third line center on a legitimate team for the long
run.
Well,
that's what you're betting on.
You're putting him second. Well, that's not just the only thing you're betting. You just said, like, then you're putting Stadnicka, who wasn't ready last year, to be a third line, the fourth line center. You're guaranteeing him as a third line center.
But you're getting back
Frederick.
In this trade, this mythical trade, you're getting back an NHL ready wing, somebody that's a cornerstone replacement for you, like a younger guy.
As a free agent or in the trade?
In the trade.
I don't know if that's who's available for trade.
It's a hockey trade. I don't know. Somebody that needs a center in exchange for somebody that can score.
I doubt that happens, but I mean, you're just not going to. Plus, you have to find a team that's willing to take $7 million for two more years.
That's the trick.
So for like again a 34-year-old guy,
and it's a team that's got to be close.
Who
and fancy
isn't as injury? He isn't as injury riddled as they say about as people try to make him out. But clearly at 34, and you never know. I mean, he's had back and groin issues in the past that could creep up, so it is totally a salary dump. And then I mean maybe that $7 million gets you a wing and another free agent center, but are they going to be as do you really want to give up having two number one centers?
You're blowing it up in a certain sense. It's
exactly.
Risky.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you can put that.
I'm not saying I would do it, but it's not the most laughable thing. It's not.
No, I mean, it's on the list with trade. It's Backus. It's Krug. It's Krejci. These are the things that we all see. We can look at cap friendly, and yep. we can see it. And the NHL and the Bruins can try to hide it and say this isn't true. But something has to give here, unless he's really going to hold, you know, play hardball with McAvoy and Carlo, and I don't know what they're going to do there. This isn't the old days. This isn't Harry Sinden telling them to go yodel in Finland or whatever. This is not the way it works anymore with these RFAs. The RFAs are basically UFAs. I mean, that's the one thing. As much as the players got kind of fleeced in the CBA negotiations, I think the owners have made up, you know, a lot better of this thing. The one thing that they've done is made restricted free agents into unrestricteds, whether it's, you know, Nylander or even going all the way back to Phil Kessel and the fact that he forced his way out. Or actually, more recently, I'd say, you know, the Kessel thing was a little different, but Dougie Hamilton clearly, you know, made the choice, and the Bruins, you know, acquiesced to that because you don't want a player that's going to sit out.
Yeah. Well, you're going to see, you'll be at development camp later this week, or
yep,
the introduction
tomorrow.
Of John Beecher.
Yep.
Who they drafted in the first round. He's going to play at Michigan this year. Mm-hmm. They do have some young talent. Vaakanainen, we haven't talked about. There's another option for them if they would move Krug.
Yeah, I mean, Vaakanainen's up there, sure. And,
anybody else you're expecting to break out in
next year?
This year, which you could count on? I mean,
well, how about this Lauko kid? I mean, I don't know if he's NHL ready, but he might be one of these guys that we see a couple times over the course of next year. I'm not sure about his two-way game at this
he's
point,
in the Quebec League.
But clearly he could score. Yeah, I mean, he wanted to play, you know, pro last year, and there wasn't really a spot for him, and he was a little too light. But he'll come to camp, and we know at least he's like they talk about guys who aren't afraid to shoot. It seems like he's not afraid to shoot, and he hits. We saw that a few times in the preseason and in the rookie games last year that he's kind of a fearless kind of player. So I'd say I'd put him in the mix. You know, they tend to, it seems like almost every year I've covered them now, they carry one teenager, so why not him, right?
Yep, and this defenseman, Axel Anderson's going to play in Providence.
Their
second-round pick from 2018.
Yeah, I don't know what Axel's going to do. I'm not sure about the Providence thing. I mean, he didn't really have a great year in the pros overseas last year.
Oh, I thought
year.
There was talk they had convinced him that he was going to come.
Oh, maybe. I mean, that might be. I think that's probably still up in the air a little bit. But,
well, I don't know if you saw my tweet. Now, this guy from The Athletic did a three-year study, 2014 to 2017. They're using this hockey war now. Which they're putting a singular number using a bunch of metrics
is that the
on
where
players.
The Bruins were like in first.
Bruins were top. Yeah. They led the way with 28 wins above replacement if you combine their 2014 through 17 picks. Now keep in mind the 2015 draft is often mocked. DeBrusk was there, but some people would say they wasted the other
but
two first round picks.
Does that include Pastrnak?
Yes.
Yeah.
Pastrnak, so, I mean, McAvoy, DeBrusk, Carlo, Danton Heinen, and Ryan Donato, who was moved, they still get credit for.
Sure.
The Bruins had the best draft results of guys who have played and made impact. Better than anybody with first-round picks. You go through Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, obviously the Oilers with some of their big picks. So they've drafted pretty well. You got to give Sweeney some credit, too. And so maybe some of these players will come from 18 to 19 will emerge as contributors that we don't see
other
right
than now. Pastrnak and McAvoy, there's no, the superstars aren't there. I mean, clearly if you're going to combine them all, I don't know exactly what that shows you when you combine them all because it's like,
well, it's just,
a lot of them have made it to the NHL
and contributed
probably.
Some.
So, but yeah, I mean, they've drafted fine, but when you lose those, when you don't take Kyle Connor or Brock Besser, doesn't excuse you for not being prepared or to make those picks and to do the right thing on those spots. And now, this time around, we'll see. You know, it's going to be a couple of years until we find out if Beecher was really the right pick.
Although
but
you said they reached on Beecher. Dale was ripping you on
the well,
on
I'm
Oscar
right,
podcast.
Because they did, because they reached in the fact that there were better. There were players at 30 that teams in the teens thought they weren't going to have a shot at. Now, why they passed on him on some of these guys also, I mean, obviously the Russian guy, clearly, you know, the Bruins should have taken the guy from Staten Island because you can't find a better place to grow up or to be from. So they should have taken the Russian kid from Staten Island. They didn't, and there were a couple other guys in that mix. There were guys that were seen, that were projected to go in the teens, and they tend to always want to go for these guys that are, I don't want to say the safe. It's funny. It's a risk, but it's safe because it's a risk that you're taking a guy who's got like third line potential with a 30th pick. Now, is your goal for him just to play in the NHL and be a good player, or do you want a player that maybe doesn't pan out completely, but could also be
safe.
A star.
It's like people were saying, this is his baseline. He's going to be a third line. Now, he was the third. everybody in that freaking team was drafted. Like 17, yeah, I mean, 18
that team
players.
Is loaded. There's no doubt. I mean,
so maybe he was overshadowed.
If you look at it, he had like 0.75 points per game. It's pretty good. But you know, okay. So on the one hand, he didn't score a lot because he was in this role. On the other hand, did he score a bunch because the team was so good? I don't know when the goals were coming. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
Are they beating a team 8-1 and he's scoring goals there? Who knows? I don't have the time to go back and research that. But everyone loves his skating, and they know. I mean, he's going to be in the NHL.
Size 6'3".
Barring injury, he's going to be in the NHL. Does that mean he's the next? Is he even Charlie Coyle? You know, who always kind of had this offensive upside that maybe hasn't shown itself in the NHL, or is he just going to be come in and be Riley Nash?
Yeah.
And
I mean, you're picking at 30, though. At that point,
yeah.
It's
a coin flip. That's just it too. You don't have a lot of expectation at 30, but when those guys do fall. And people and then you look at it and say, why did everybody else pick pass them? Of course, now the new thing to say is also maybe somebody has to think outside the box and maybe stop letting like this Russian kid fall into the second round just because, you know, he didn't do something exactly the way the hockey culture said you should do it or something, and other guys like that. And then you look at the way Cole Caulfield fell down the draft just because he's, you know, 5'7" or whatever. Yeah. And everyone keeps comparing him to DeBrincat. I think everyone in the league would take DeBrincat or Johnny Gaudreau or whatever.
They're still scared.
But these guys can't get their brains. You know, they're all in their 60s and 70s. It's kind of like the government. It's like people just finding out what the internet is type thing here. So,
well, speaking of Caulfield, who went to Montreal, the division is good. We know that already. And now Florida is making rumblings. They're going to go after Panarin and Bobrovsky, the two big fish
might do
in the
it.
Market.
I mean,
that would be unbelievable. Have Quenneville, Panarin, Bobrovsky,
Bobrovsky
drafted their goalie of the future too.
But there's no what's the defense core there? Ekblad.
They were supposed
Keith
to be better
Yandel.
Than they were last year.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they'd be pretty good. I mean,
even the Sabres have some teeth. But I mean, it's going to be Tampa, Toronto, Boston, Florida. That's a good 14.
And Montreal will be there. I mean, Montreal's coming on. I mean, they've got a couple. They got a Paling kid came in last year and. They still have the goalie. Let's face it. He had a hell of a finish last year, Carey Price. So they're going to be competitive. But I'm not so worried about like, oh, these teams are going to be so much better. I mean, look, they're all going to be in cap problems. I mean, Toronto and Tampa, we don't know what they're going to look like. And the one thing this guy, we talk about it too much on our shows, but what is Toronto's plan for defense? Because now they have a defense core without Jake Gardner and without Ron Hainsey.
Right.
And they don't have Marner, and they're going to get Janssen. It sounds like they're going to get Janssen and Kapanen signed at reasonable rates. But you have to have defense.
They're going to trade deadline again, right? I mean, they'll do the same thing the Bruins are.
But will they have the cap space? I mean, they're going to be right up against it at this rate. So I don't know. And then Zaitsev wants out too. So that's three guys. So where's the defense core?
One more year of Muzzin. It was your guy. So he's got to be the savior. Play 30 minutes a night. All right, so there it is in a nutshell. Now, we'll do another one of these next week after free agency launches. Maybe we'll get Pete Blackburn involved in that one next
week. Yeah, maybe people tweet us some ideas to make this more fun and make it mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, the plan is to do it a little more regularly, maybe every week if we can, and we'll do it. We're not on the air typically during the start of the Bruins season on EEI FM, so we'll keep doing it for sure once the season starts. But if you have any thoughts, hit us up at the Skate Pod on Twitter, at the Skate Pod. Calvin was definitive. He wanted the in the title. I'm making him a little more official. And Matt's got great stuff, I'm sure, at development camp later this week. We can slot some of that reaction in. John Beecher, et cetera. And Bruins are not in terrible shape. Stay the course. I think there is a sense they blew a golden opportunity. They did.
Absolutely. But they're not going to fold up. And
I don't think so either.
This idea that standing pat is terrible.
It's not terrible. And that's kind of their MO. That's what they did last year. They were all kind of mocked for being boring, but it ended up
exactly
being the
right
thing to do.
The people that said, you can get a Chris Wagner or a Nordstrom on waivers because they got Jamel Smith. That is not true, and they proved that.
As much as I want to see them re-sign Johansson and trade Krug, we're talking about bad contracts with Backes, and it was not that long ago they're looking to ship out to the Rangers and take space for him.
Right,
Bolesky. They had some bad free agent signings, and so maybe they've learned their lesson. All right, and Kalman is available on Twitter as always, and we should take a moment of silence for Dave Schultz, who is hanging it up. Your guy, you drove him into retirement.
I think Brad Marchand did it. I think the Bruins did it. With playing hockey the way it shouldn't be played, and they should be banned, and whatever else these people are writing.
at Matt Kalman on Twitter. Matt, we'll see you next time.